excited.
Hey. Me too.
Hi guys, you are in for a special deluxe treat. It is I.
Double trouble, if you will.
I know, there you go. Nadine Molvina, and I'm also here with...
Keisha Scott. I'm from the Done With Debauchery podcast, and your podcast is?
At the Sober Butterfly Podcast. No app, that's Instagram, but just, you know, the Sober Butterfly Podcast. And we are live from Toronto.
Yeah, so you came yesterday. You actually came all the way from New York to do this, which...
It wasn't that far. It was like an hour flight.
You crossed an international border. Like, that is actually a big deal. So thank you for coming. I appreciate it so much.
And thank you for being such an amazing host. Aww. I feel like so at home here in Toronto.
Good.
Like I do. So last night, can I tell them what we did?
100%.
Okay, so last night, Keisha and I planned our very first sober girl meetup. And it was amazing. The theme was all Keisha's idea, which I thought was so cute. Boo, like boo for Halloween. No
booze.
Yes, because no booze allowed, of course. Yes.
Yeah, we had so much fun. We rented the party room in my building. We had 7 sober girls come over. Everybody brought mocktails, treats. We had a charcuterie board. Mm-hmm. Nadine made us a murder mystery game. So much fun.
Okay,
I have a video of you when your character dies and you're like writhing on the floor. It's so good.
I was like fake foaming at the mouth.
And for both of us, I think it was our first time actually having a sober girl get together. It was nothing that I'd done before.
Same.
So yeah, I feel like it was such a success for our first time.
Agreed. And it will not be our last time. Like, I think this was a really great way for us to just to bond with other people mm-hmm. who are sober, because I feel like I'm connected to so many beautiful sober women online.
Yeah.
But like, it's hard to sometimes transition from online friend to in real life person friend.
100%. And that's what I felt yesterday. And it almost like, it didn't feel weird when everybody was coming, because I was like, oh, that's that person that I've seen your post for however long. And there is a little bit of a connection already, because you've bonded over something that is just like such a significant part of your life.
Yeah.
That I feel like the rest just like easily like falls into place.
But absolutely.
Yeah, as soon as like you got there yesterday, like we hugged right away. I was like, oh my God, like we've been friends for 10 years is what it felt like.
And then we had Sarah make us like, so Sarah is like Canada's mixologist, sober mixologist.
Yeah, she has a website, a newsletter, and an Instagram account called Some Good Clean Fun. And she does a lot of taste testing for different non-alcoholic drinks. She makes like all these unreal recipes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what did we have yesterday? Death in the afternoon?
Death in the afternoon.
Okay, I'm going to inject, like, we have to show you what that looked like, because Keisha also picked up these like beautiful sparkly, like, I don't know, sparkles?
Yeah, they're like sparkly edible sparkles, like iridescent, that you add it to your cup and give it a little stir. And we just started to make it like everything kind of spooky for Halloween.
It was really cute. So I would say big success, A++ for our very first sober girl meetup.
100%. I almost felt like I had like a hangover today, because I was like buzzing so hard yesterday after everybody left. Yeah. I like couldn't like calm down and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And when I woke up today, I was like, wow, like what a time. Like
what a time. But like this... sober hangover, because I have had a sober hangover versus a real hangover, night and day, right?
100%. Like, it's like I don't have the anxiety. Yeah, I'm not hiding in my room ordering food.
Yeah.
But it was just like the kind of like the tiredness, but it's like 100% worth it. And it just like totally proved like we don't need alcohol to have fun. I had much fun last night.
And like we have leftovers. So like today throughout this episode, and we're cutting another one, you will see us sipping on an array of different alcohol-free options, because Keisha really put me on. Speaking of non-alcoholic bevies, some people in the recovery space feel like drinking non-alcoholic drinks is not like, it doesn't make you not sober, but it's not like a good thing to do or a good practice.
There's a lot of controversy over like whether it's like acceptable or not, if it's, I guess, like a gateway or like a slippery slope back to drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Wait, we haven't even said what our episode topic is.
So that's a great transition. We are talking today all about, like you mentioned, controversial taboo topics in sobriety. One size fits all approach to recovery, in my opinion, isn't the way to go. But we'll get into all of that and then some in this week's episode of the Sober Butterfly Podcast times
Done with Debauchery.
Stay tuned. As we mentioned a little while ago, non-alcoholic beverages. So we're talking zero-proof beer, for example. We're talking non-alcoholic bevies like what I'm drinking right now. I'm sipping on a peach goose, which is not like Grey Goose, like a vodka Grey Goose. It is by a company called Partake Brewing. honestly, like I said last night, Keisha, you put me onto so many different non-alcoholic bevies, you and Sarah, and I was just like, my head was spinning, like, but not from a drunk
world.
Yes, from a whole different world. So like, that is actually something that is considered controversial. Many people feel as though non-alcoholic beverages can lead to a relapse.
Yeah.
I still very much will drink non-alcoholic, alcohol-free options.
Yeah.
But like, I think it's something to monitor, right? Like, I think that like, it depends on when you are choosing.
For sure.
So if you're turning to alcohol, non-alcoholic beverage, because you're stressed, like, that may be something that you want to think about.
And so when you say you're drinking like non-alcoholic drinks, is that just like sparkling waters, like juice, like kombucha? Because there is such a range, like, even from what, like, I'm having a kombucha now, you're having a non-alcoholic beer, there's de-alcoholized wines, there's now non-alcoholic spirits as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just like such a broad range of things that people have to choose from. And I think that something also that is really controversial is like, these are considered like non-alcoholic. Like, this is a 0.0% beer.
Okay.
But there are some beers that are like 0.4% or 0.5% that do have that low alcohol content.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think a lot of people can like get their back up about and saying like, that is 100% a no, because there is alcohol in it.
Okay.
But I mean, I feel like I'm going already on a tangent.
No,
but
that's real, because I've heard the same about kombucha, right?
Yeah.
So like, I was actually talking to someone who didn't know that there were small traces of was small traces of alcohol in kombucha.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but it's not enough to get you drunk.
Exactly.
And they were like, well, with my addict brain, that's how they described it. Like, with my addict brain, my mind, like, I can go there. I can see myself then choosing to drink more kombucha to where I start to feel a buzz. And I'm like, well, good luck with that.
Yeah, but you won't ever.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, your body, like, if you have a healthy liver, like, the way that it processes out alcohol, you can't drink enough non-alcoholic beers or 0.4% beers to get a buzz, because your body is just filtering it out at such a high rate. Like, I think your liver can I mean, like, don't quote me, I'm not a doctor, but I can, like, I'm not a doctor, guys, they took my license. But I think it's, like, 1 ounce of alcohol an hour your liver can filter.
Okay.
And, like, a traditional drink is 5%. So to be, like, 0.4, by the time, like, you're actually able to consume that much liquid to, like, get you drunk, your body has already worked through that alcohol content.
So that begs the question, playing devil's advocate, well, then what is the point? Why drink an alcohol-free beer, for example, or something that has only 0.05% alcohol? Like, why consume something like that if you're not feeling the effects?
The effects.
Beer, like, at least for most people, like, when they first taste alcohol, aka ethanol, it's pretty gross. Like, if you think back to the first time you ever consumed it, you're like, ew. And I think my first time ever consuming alcohol was, like, as a kid, like, eight or nine.
I love what you're saying, alcohol, with your New York accent.
It's really?
Yeah,
I have a cute accent, guys.
It's so cute.
How do you say it?
Alcohol?
What if I say alcohol?
Oh my God.
Alcohol. So the way, like the first time I ever consumed beer, I was on a train. I must have been 8 or 9, and I was bugging them. Like, we were, it wasn't like a regular public train. It was like we were going across country.
Yeah, a trip.
In England. And I begged, and they like let me have a sip. And I was just like, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever put in my mouth. Like, why do people, why do adults go crazy for this? And so like, the taste of alcohol, most people, upon their first impression, it's pretty gross. So is it that we've just like conditioned our brains into believing that this thing tastes good, and therefore even as sober people we still want it? And I know that's really lofty, like, that's out there, but I'm like, why is it that I drink non-alcoholic versions of drinks
then? And I think that there's like a few different reasons. Like, there is that placebo effect. Like, I know for me, when I was first like cutting alcohol out of my life, there's like that ritual every evening at home when you would be cracking a bottle of wine, and like, it's not going to be delicious if I'm just pouring myself a glass of tap water. Like, I needed something to substitute in that moment to be delicious, to be like fun, and like feel like I was like getting that same kind of like, not that like hit or buzz from it, but like that experience of having it.
Yeah.
And then like 100%, like in the summer, like going to the cottages with my friends, like going to patios, having the option to get like a mocktail in a fun glass or like a non-alcoholic beer, and like a regular like Heineken like 0.0, nobody would ever know that that's not an alcoholic drink. So if you're not ready to tell people you're not drinking, it's easy to blend in if that's like what you're wanting to do. But I do think it's like also like that placebo effect. Like if you are maybe, I don't know if it's like the difference between a psychological or a physical addiction, mm-hmm. but if you are just like craving that beer taste and you just need to like cleanse your palate, like a non-alcoholic option like could be what gets you through that day.
That's true. That is true. I never thought about the placebo effect.
Yeah.
I think just to touch on maybe naysayers or those who are strongly mm-hmm. opposed drinking non-alcoholic beverages as a substitute for like a sparkling water or just something that's carbonated that may give you that feeling versus or satiates that palate mm-hmm. that you may have. I've heard many people before talk about how, like, for example, you go to a social event where you are a sober person, other people are drinking, so there's alcohol present, and accidentally consuming alcohol at that party and then sort of spiraling
because your drink blends in like on the table with everyone.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So like I had not that exact thing happen to me, but like in spring I went to Brazil and it was carnival, so I was in a large social outing. We were at a restaurant and everyone ordered, what is it called again? You have to pronounce it for
Caprinha?
Me. Caprinha. I don't know why I can't say that. Caprinha. You guys, I was in Brazil and I still don't know the drink, the national drink, the Caprinha, right? And so everyone ordered Caprinha. And so I said to the waitress on the side, low, like in a low tone, I was just like, I'll take that, but like no alcohol. I thought she understood and she bought me back an alcoholic version. So I took a sip and it's like an awkward situation where like I didn't tell the people I was with, I was sober. So I just kind of like took a sip and then immediately tasted
because you knew right away as soon as you tasted
it. That has such a distinct flavor too. It's like really like overpowering. So I'm just like, this is not alcoholic. So instead of making a big fuss, I just took a napkin nearby and spit it out because I was like, I don't want to swallow this. That was the first time I guess I could see why people may choose to just completely sever ties with anything that reminds them of alcohol, looks like alcohol, because that could be really confusing for people. And then if you have a sip, it's almost like, okay, sip turns into
maybe I'll just swallow this one.
And then like, I already have a drink. Like, why not forget? You know, let's keep going.
I totally get that perspective as well. And I feel like that's like a whole other point is like the fear of being in social settings and not having control over like what drink you're being handed. You don't know what's in it. At least if it's something like in a beer bottle, you can see the label that it's like non-alcoholic. But like, I totally get that fear too. And like, I find myself double checking at restaurants, like when, if they just put it down and say like Caesar, I'm like, okay, but is it a non-alcoholic Caesar? Or is it just, is it your version like with alcohol? Like, I need to know. I went for dinner and the server was like kind of like hush hush about it. And he like gave my drink down and didn't specify that it was non-alcoholic. So I clarified and he's like, sorry, I didn't know if you wanted anyone to know.
Okay.
And I was like, that is really sweet and like sweet. Really thoughtful. Cause like, who knows? Like, people also could be pregnant and like not announcing it yet. I thought it was sweet, but then I was also like, I'm not ashamed of it. Like, you can tell even the next table if you want.
Yeah.
Like,
tell everyone. Let's make a PSA.
Exactly. Exactly. I think also like, as I said, like people that may have had like a physical addiction, like that taste can be like a lot more like triggering, like for a non-alcoholic beer or something like that. But I find even now, like wine used to be like my drink. I would love to drink like a bottle or two of wine a night. And now I'll have like a non-alcoholic wine and I'll have like a glass or two. And like my last bottle I had to throw out because it was sitting in my fridge for so long, which like would never happen with an alcoholic wine.
Never.
So I guess it's all
blasphemy. No.
Exactly. I was like, who is she?
For self-restraint.
So it depends how you're using it. Like if you're like chugging the bottle of non-alcoholic wine, trying to get a buzz, then like, okay, maybe we need to reevaluate what's happening
behind the scenes.
Yeah. I actually did a poll on my Instagram as well.
Yeah.
To see just out of my followers who actually drinks non-alcoholic cocktails, wines, or beers. Mm-hmm. And 83% of the people said that they did. They do drink them.
Okay.
17% said they sometimes do.
Okay.
And actually 0% at the time that I checked this said no.
Okay.
So everyone like has them at like a little bit.
Yeah.
At least.
And so that is, though, the sample size you're looking at, a sober community, people who are plugged in and well-versed in the sober lingo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's my Done with Debauchery Instagram account. Most of the people following me are either sober or sober curious.
Yeah.
And I did look at who responded, and it was mostly, like, women in our age demographic.
We're back.
We're back. Our battery died, but we're back.
We're back and better than ever.
So just what I was saying was the sample size. I looked at the people who had voted on it, and it was mostly women in our age range, sort of like late 20s to early 40s. Okay. There were a few men that had said, yes, they do drink them as well, but like mostly my followers are females. So, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. So there you have it. We are in favor. We highly support.
Yay. And also, your decisions are not set in stone, like regarding the non-alcoholic drinks. Regarding drinking, it is.
Just kidding. No turning back. No.
But yeah, so like, let's say like today you don't feel comfortable, but down the road you do want to try it. Like, there is no harm, I think, in like experimenting, as long as it's something within your comfort level.
Mm-hmm. Like, nothing is permanent. Like,
you can always change your mind. Yeah, exactly. So our second controversial topic in sobriety is Cali Sober. So speaking of changing your mind throughout sobriety, trying different things that may or may not work for you, I know that you do not identify with Cali Sober.
Anymore.
You used to, and I currently do. So Cali Sober is?
Yeah, let me break it down. So Cali Sober, you have to be from California. No, I'm joking. You do not have to be from California. You have to basically quit alcohol. You've sworn it off. But you're changing your state of consciousness. So you may smoke marijuana or like take edibles or like do LSD, which is also acid, I just learned. And then you could also like maybe experiment with like DMT, mushrooms.
Yeah.
Things that are really like expanding your mind. And so, yeah, that's like the extent of what I know it as. And then we'll talk a little bit more about like my experience being Cali Sober, but I used it sort of like as a transition from like going from doing everything to like, okay, let me be healthier and like just smoke weed from time to time. So
yeah,
I can talk more about that later, but like, where does the term come from?
Yeah. So the term California Sober, Cali Sober, is from she's an ex-raver and writer named Michelle Luke. She actually moved to California and was going through this transition where she was cutting alcohol out of her life and she was cutting out all other drugs. So like, we're talking like hard drugs.
Okay.
But she was keeping in marijuana and psychedelics. So she was like, I don't know if she was smoking weed, but like she was like having like weed as part of it, doing things like mushrooms, DMT, anything that really like expands your mind.
Okay.
And then now it's been coined California Sober because California was one of the only states at the time that had marijuana legalized.
That's why she lived there.
Yeah, 100%.
Michelle, come on, so you can confirm or completely dismiss that.
If you're listening, hello, we would love to have you on the podcast.
Hi, Michelle. But yeah, so that's really like something that I hear come up a lot as a controversial topic or a taboo topic in sobriety, because some people are like, you would consider them a teetotaler, like they do not do anything. Like, some people who are sober won't even like take an aspirin.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, absolutely not. If sobriety was a spectrum, I don't know where I would fall. I just know that I don't drink and I don't consume things that change my state of consciousness.
Mine. Yeah.
Like, at first I was like, I'm gonna be a teetotaler, I'm not gonna do anything. But I was quitting so many things at once. Like, from drinking was the main, I would say, drug, because drinking is alcohol, in my opinion, is a drug.
Yeah.
Probably one of the worst, but it was like the common denominator that led me to other substances. So like, my inhibitions would be lowered and now I'm ready to like have a good time. Like, you offer me something, I'm gonna say yes 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10. So I was like, yeah. So like, it wasn't just the alcohol I was quitting, it was like other drugs too. So my body, I felt like, was like extremely vulnerable. And then for me, routine was so critical in the early stages, like having a set routine to maintain my sobriety. But when you throw travel in the mix, it disrupts that. So like, just to sum up, basically I'm in Morocco and it wasn't even offered to me. I went looking. I like asked my tour guide. I was just like, listen, marijuana, like I need something. And he was like, hashish. I was like, okay, what is that? I'll try it. So I did smoke hashish.
Is it legal there? Like, was it like a bar, like in a big like hookah?
No, that's different. I think that's shisha. That's different.
And that's just like flavored tobacco.
That's just flavored tobacco. Okay,
got it.
But this was like, it was not legal because it was like a whole ordeal. Like, this poor man, like, but he had to go into like the dead of the night in the desert to go like get this for me. And I was just like, thanks.
great.
So he came back with it and I smoked it, and it reminded me of like just getting high, and then I smuggled it back with me to Spain, because then I went to Spain next, because that's what I do. That's what I did. Yeah, I definitely smuggled it across the border.
Oh my God. And that then is I a kept smoking.
Yes. And then in Spain, marijuana is legal. So I went to Barcelona and they had different weed clubs, like different marijuana clubs. So I actually, and this is where I was like, I need to draw the line. Because when I went to Spain, every single day, Barcelona, so this is at the tail end of my trip. So I've been traveling for like almost like 6 weeks at that point. Yeah. I was tired. I was ready to go home. And I spent the majority of my time in Barcelona high as a kite. Like I was in these like dark, they were cute like little clubs, but like picture like fluorescent lights, like it being in the dark, and it's like 2 p.m. Yeah. Right? So it's like I wasn't exploring. I was just getting high all day.
Yeah, you weren't seeing any of the actual city. You were just, yeah.
I'm a card carrier for one of the clubs there. Like I paid a membership and everything. I was there for like 10 days. Like, why do I have a membership?
A card carrier.
Oh, somewhere in my archives, I can find that card. So anyway, I was spending a lot of money and time getting high. And then I was like, are you really sober if all you're living to do right now is wake up and get high? So before I left Spain, I was like, okay, you're not bringing any of the stuff back with you. You're not smuggling drugs back.
No.
Because I don't even think weed was legal in New York at this point yet. God. So this is summer 2021. So I'm like, okay, you're going to finish all your drugs. So I did that. And like, I actually almost missed my flight because I was so high coming. Yeah. So it's like, I felt like addiction replacement, right? Like the pendulum switched from like me being obsessed with alcohol.
But in such a short amount of time.
I know.
Like, so my question is, I guess, were you smoking weed before your trip, or did it just ramp up when you got on your trip?
So I was sober for like 2-3 weeks before my trip, didn't have anything, completely severed ties with everything. And then for the majority of my trip, so I went to London, I went to Portugal, I went to a vineyard in Portugal, no temptation, like drank water, ate grapes, had fun. Yes, I literally ate grapes. Like they prepared a little spread for me with grapes, water, and crackers. And I was like, yes, this is $50, 50 euros worth. Thank you. Yeah, because there was no discount for sober people.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so then I went to Morocco, and that's when I was starting to feel it. Like I needed something to like take the edge off. I'm air quoting, take the edge off. And so I went looking for drugs, and then Barcelona legal.
Yeah.
Came back to New York, like started working in person again, and was like, girl, you can't. Like, so when I came back to New York, I severed ties with marijuana.
So I am Cali sober currently right now, and have been for the last 8 months, which is the same amount of time that I've been sober from alcohol. But I just feel like my relationship with weed is so different. So here in Canada, it is legal where I live. Like you can buy it at the dispensary, like just walk it off the street. But like, I'm not like craving to like smoke a joint. I never smoke. I only do edibles or like a THC drink.
Okay.
And like my tolerance is so low. And as soon as I go over that, like it's anxiety, it's panic, like it's not a good time. So when I first cut out alcohol, I felt the same. I needed something to like kind of like quote unquote take that edge off and like escape from like the reality of like the day that I was having. So I would want to unwind at the end of the day with like a can or an edible and just kind of be like teleported to like a different dimension for a period of time.
Take me away.
Yeah. But it would be like, okay, like maybe I was doing it in the beginning, it was a couple times a week. Then it trickled down to like maybe once a week. And now I'm at about once a month or maybe once every 3 weeks that I'm doing it. And I'm never doing it alone. I'm only doing it like with someone else. Usually we're at my place ordering food. Okay. Like, and it's like a little experience.
Okay.
So I think that my relationship with it is very different. But if I was getting to the point where like I was coming home and being like, I need that now. Yes. That's where I'd have to like pump the brakes.
And that's what I was doing. Yeah. So it sounds like you have a healthy relationship. It's something though that I think people should consistently check in with to evaluate if the relationship is changing and morphing into something else.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I feel like I go back and forth. Like I'm so far on like, okay, I think it's fine. It's working for me. I'm actually decreasing my usage with it. So it is fine. But then I'm still thinking, okay, it is still like a substance, even though it is a plant, like it's still like considered a drug. So like, let's say I was doing like, I'm only doing heroin once a month. Like,
that's such a great way to say
it. So it's just, I'm conflicted in that as well. Thinking about it from that perspective, or one of my friends was like, yeah, I'm only doing crack like every other Friday. No big deal.
You go, girl.
That's what I mean. But I think that like in the grand scheme of things, I was using it as a form of harm reduction when I was cutting alcohol out of my life. Mm-hmm. And so, like, harm reduction is essentially, like, reducing the harm in the substances you're using. If you are, like, let's say physically addicted to different types of drugs, if you go into a treatment center, they do substitute that with, I can't remember the name of the drugs, but it's still another, like, narcotic to wean you off, but it's just what it's going to be less harmful.
I did an episode, I think it's episode 103 or 104 of the Sober Butterfly podcast on harm reduction, mm-hmm. so quick plug for that. But also, the doctor that I interviewed that was talking about harm reduction really wanted to distinguish that, like, harm reduction is not abstinence. So, and the thing about harm reduction is, like, you personalize what your goal is. So, like, for example, if you really do want to reduce your risk of overdosing and you choose to, like, still partake, it's like doing so in a healthy way. So I can totally understand that approach as well.
Yeah, so on here I have, it seeks to reduce the health and social harm associated with addiction and substance use without necessarily requiring people who use substances from abstaining or stopping.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, I don't know where I got that from to credit the source. I think it was maybe, like, Healthline.
Okay. And a lot of people on here, like, they didn't use the verbiage, like, harm reduction, but I think that's what they were describing. When I say on here, I'm looking at my phone.
Yeah, I was like, where?
On here. So yesterday I did poll some followers and they asked them how they felt about Sober Cali, what it meant to them. And it was just an open forum so people could fill that in for themselves. And a lot of people were saying things like, I hate the phrase Cali sober, but in moderation and as long as it doesn't become a habit, was what Alejandra on the Move responded by saying. There was one woman in particular who detested, like, she was like, I hate the term Cali sober because I use it like for medical purposes. That was what she said.
Oh, okay, like, for like chronic pain or anxiety.
Exactly. And so I was like, you know what, like, let's be inclusive. I was like, I will mention that on the podcast because I think Cali sober gives off this air of fluff, and like, no offense to anyone Cali sober, but like, it does give this idea of like, oh, airy, breezy, light.
Yeah.
But like, some people are really using marijuana for medical purposes. So that's, I'm assuming, why she doesn't like the term.
Yeah. And I guess it's like the question of like, they're sober and using it for medical purposes. Yes. I don't think that they would. Yeah. I wouldn't consider that to be Cali sober. I think it's like a conscious decision to be using it as a substance. Like, I'm using it for a good time.
Yeah. Other people were just saying other things, like, better than not sober at all. But for me, it's still using a substance to be altered. This person was making the distinction between the cravings is not the substance, but the state of mind.
Yeah.
Which I thought interesting as well. Out of the people that I polled on my page, just some quick stats for us. I think the majority of people were, thank you, Keisha's just pulling that up for us. 62% are just plain old sober, 21% identified as being Cali sober, and then 18%, I had to throw this in, I was like, depends on the day.
So you're Cali sober, so confirming.
Because, like, yeah, basically, so we should add 21% and 18% together, which would give us a grand total of
39%. Look at that mental math. Fuck
there you go. Just like adding carried one. Okay. If it depends on the day, then you are engaging in marijuana.
Definitely. Right? Definitely. So. Very interesting.
I'm curious though for you, Keisha. Marijuana, it's not something that you're using, or edibles specifically. You're not using it as a coping mechanism, right?
Yeah.
So would you be interested, or are you open to the full scope of the definition? So it's not just marijuana, but it's other psychedelics like LSD, for example, or like ayahuasca is like something really hot. Mushrooms are making a full comeback.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm wondering, are you limiting yourself to just edibles, or are you open to the realm of possibilities with other mind-altering substances?
That's a really good question. If you called me tomorrow and said, do you want to do some mushrooms? I would say no.
Okay.
But I don't know if, like, down the road, maybe if it was the right setting, if it was a microdose versus, like, we're taking enough to actually hallucinate. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not interested in, like, hallucinating. Freaks me out. Mm-hmm. I have done both mushrooms and LSD, like, in my high school years, and hallucinated, and it was freaky. Not freaky enough to stop me from doing it a second time. Mm-hmm. But so I've already experienced that, so I don't know that I would be really interested in it. A few years ago, I was at a cottage in the summer, and we did actually microdose LSD.
Oh, okay.
And it was a lot of fun, but I was also drinking and partying at the time. So yeah. I was in a completely different like mindset. And looking back at it now, like some of the things that we did, like tubing and like jet skiing, like were not safe at all.
Don't recommend.
Yeah, I'm not recommending it at all. So yeah, if it was tomorrow and I was somewhere and somebody was offering it, I think I would say no.
Okay.
But the ayahuasca is something that has piqued my interest for a really long time.
Same.
And I think that that also comes on like a spiritual level. Like as you go through sobriety, you get more in touch with like who you are. You're like learning new hobbies, like what brings you joy. And it brings you so much clarity, I think. And that's something that like ayahuasca is just like known to do. And it's supposed to be really good for addiction as well. I know a girl who actually like did ayahuasca and like she got a message during her ceremony that alcohol was no longer serving her and she hasn't drank since. And it's been like, I think 8 months for her or something.
So with that being said, because the ayahuasca piece is interesting to me, it's something that like I constantly go back and forth with because I think that what you're referring to is like healing aspects, right? Like nobody is doing ayahuasca to casually, get high, like casually just like, like there's a whole like, I don't know if shaman's the correct term.
It is,
like,
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Some people are like, don't say shaman anymore. I don't know. Like a spiritual guide. There, okay. It's a whole ceremony. So for people who are unfamiliar, girl, like it's all the buzzwords are changing. But there is a whole ceremony. Like they, you can't do ayahuasca by yourself. I'm sure you could, but like, why would you want to? It's almost like you would have to find a toad from the jungle. Like,
yeah, you need to be like in a safe space. It's a guided experience.
Yes. And it's not a pleasant experience. So most drugs I did in the past and alcohol were like used for recreation. Purposes, not for like healing purposes. So it's something that I'm constantly like, I love, once again, circling back to what you said earlier, just like flowing and like your ideas can shift and they can change. Mm-hmm. And I also love that you mentioned that it can help with sobriety. I know someone who as well went for that purpose and has also
it's
completely stopped smoking and drinking, smoking tobacco and drinking altogether from that one experience.
Why do I feel like Chelsea Handler like also did something like that?
She definitely did. She had a special on Netflix a few years ago and went and like she documented the whole thing. I forgot where they went. Somewhere in South America, she threw up. Like, we got to see the whole thing. Yeah, that's, like,
part of it. You purge.
I'm a little afraid of, like, losing my mind and not coming back
and
from it.
And being in the forest.
I'm not so afraid of that part.
But losing, like, your mind in the forest.
Yeah, that part.
Like, and we're not talking, like, the Canadian Rocky Mountains. Like, like, there's, like, fucking anacondas out there.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So that's that. Like, I mean, think Cali Sober is, like, just something that you have to monitor. Like, at least for me, I monitored and I failed to use responsibly. Just like with drinking and any other substance in my life, I have failed the test miserably. So I just choose to not do it.
Yeah, and stay tuned for my Cali Sober journey. Right now it's working. I find that over time I'm using it less and less, and maybe it'll be zero coming up.
Hi.
Hello, we're back. We took a brief intermission here.
We did.
But we're back. We've also refreshed our drinks. This is the non-alcoholic Smoky Bay Chardonnay. So it's an Australian Chardonnay, obviously 0.0% alcohol. We were drinking this last night at Booze No Booze, and it was a pretty big hit.
I loved it.
Yeah.
This is like maybe my favorite non-alcoholic wine I've ever had.
Yeah, it's so hard to find a good one. Like, they're all, like, so kind of, like, juicy and fruity or sour.
Or aftertaste.
Yeah.
Aftertaste is big for me. Like, this doesn't have an aftertaste. It's crisp. It's refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get hungover. Or, you know, when you drink so much wine, you get, like, the particle buildup in your mouth. Have you ever had that residue?
That taste.
That taste. Yeah. And it's, like, sticky. It's, like, not a good feeling. Dry mouth, too.
Yeah, the dry mouth. And there's also something that is about, like, using a cute glass that just, like, elevates the entire experience.
Here we are. We're still fancy. You couldn't look at us and not think that, I mean, you, never mind. You should look at us and think we don't drink, but like,
we're glowing.
We're glowing. Yes. We have that sober girl glow. Everything that I thought alcohol was going to be for me, this idea of sophistication and womanhood, like I can still embody that without being shit-faced, excuse my language, or being drunk, because like that was like the aesthetic I was going for, but not the reality of what how I looked.
Yeah.
I looked
a hot mess. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, the makeup and the lipstick is getting a little smudged to the side.
Yeah. So here we are actually embodying the version of self that we wish to, we used to wish to be.
And we're going to go to our third and final controversial topic in sobriety, which is...
We are looking at the difference between being a dry drunk versus being like emotionally, spiritually sober.
Okay.
So there's a difference, and I'm going to break down what that difference is for y'all in case you've never heard of a dry drunk. So
I had never heard that term before until you said it to me.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm not as experienced like in AA. I have been to about 4 meetings all online, but I've never heard that before.
Being a dry drunk is someone who abstains from drinking, so you're not consuming alcohol. However, you are not working on your personal development or like growing, like I'm gonna quote this, growing amongst spiritual lines is a phrase that I often hear in AA. So basically you're abstaining from alcohol, kudos to you, but you're not growing amongst spiritual lines.
You're still doing all your old behaviors that you did when you were drinking.
Thank you. Exactly. So the only thing that's changed is that you've removed the substance. It's a lot, first of all. So when you remove alcohol, especially if a big part of alcohol was your like emotional support, your actual identity, because I think a lot of people warp drinking into 100%. Like their self-worth and identity.
Yeah.
And it becomes your personality. Like, what do you do for fun? I drink. Like,
I'm a fun party girl.
Right. That was me. Like, through and through.
Same.
So when you remove that, I think it's a lot to like, you know, rediscover about yourself, your values, your wants, your needs, your desires, all of that. So they say that like, it's really easy to get trapped. You're still doing the same things. You're still not dealing with like maybe some core issues that you have.
Yeah.
That you're simply not drinking.
I guess my question is like, what would like those behaviors be like? Like fighting with the people you care about, like stealing,
lying.
Okay, yes. Like hiding, like that.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
The main thing is like helping other sober people. So like, or people
being
get
of
sober.
Service.
Being of service, exactly. So like, if you are just like thriving as a sober person and you're not helping other people, then you're a dry drunk, sorry. Like that's what how they would define it, because it's someone who is not working the steps. So like in AA, there were 12 steps that they swear by. You don't have a sponsor. You're not doing outreach, community outreach to help other people. You're just basically looking out for numero uno, which I think is number one, okay, which is you.
Also available in Spanish, if you're wondering.
Yes, you guys download the episode. Que habla español? Sí. But like, it's really interesting because I think though, the reason why I do think it's taboo is because in the beginning, I think you have to prioritize you and your sobriety.
You can only like at that point take care of yourself.
And if you
and
can't.
It's barely.
Yeah, if you can't take care of you, then you certainly can't help anyone else. But like people feel really strongly that like after so long, and maybe that timeline looks different for different people, and like in your personal recovery, like it may be a year, it could be 2 months, whatever it could be. But like if you're no longer growing, if you're no longer like in search of how to be a better person, I suppose, and you're doing the same things as mentioned, then you are a dry drunk.
I feel like there's like gotta be a spectrum, like you said, like at the beginning you're not able to probably show up for other people because you're barely hanging on to yourself.
Yeah.
And then what is like that timeline? But I do understand like the need to like give back and like help people that are going through some of the like similar things that you went through. But that could also just be like a personality thing. Like what if you're a naturally shy person and like you're not comfortable doing that?
You don't have to be outgoing, you don't have to be extroverted, you can do it in other ways.
Quietly.
That could look like, instead of like donating like old clothes, for example, to like in the US we go to like Salvation Army or Goodwill. Instead of doing that, like look up a woman's shelter, for example, or like
for people in recovery
or sober houses.
Like
things like that. Like just always thinking about like someone who may need it, who may be suffering from like addiction. Yeah. And things like that.
And so what exactly is emotional sobriety?
That's the old age question that many people, even in meetings, like I'll ask people because I hear people share. So like if you've never been to an AA meeting, and they look different, but a lot of them encompass like step work and then like personal shares. So people will share like what led them to sobriety, what life was like before sobriety. And then I keep hearing the buzz term emotional sobriety come mm-hmm. up, which is like being, I think
it is a total buzzword.
When I hear emotional sobriety, I think of just being in touch with like your emotions and not feeling the need to numb. Because I think we talked a little bit about addiction replacement, or at least use that phrase yeah. at one point or another, as being Cali sober yeah. and using that as a replacement. So I think if you're emotionally eating, for example, like that is not being emotionally sober, because you've just transferred your addiction from one thing, which was drinking or drugs, to yeah. another thing. So like you're not processing, you're not regulating, you're sort of just still looking to numb or replace.
Yeah.
So that's how I would see emotional sobriety. I don't know if that's yeah. official.
Yeah. Like, and I think that that makes total sense. And like even talking about like the ayahuasca and like the opening your mind, like a natural part I think of getting sober is like getting more in touch with who you are as yeah. a person, your values, like what brings you joy, and
also
and like letting go of that ego.
And I think the biggest thing for me was like feeling uncomfortable. Oh my God, I did not want to feel discomfort in any yeah. form, and so I was using alcohol to numb, just connecting to my emotions, yeah. right? Like I don't want to feel any sense of like yeah discomfort, yeah, like whether it be
uncomfortable,
yes even if it's a big emotion, like I'm really sad, I'm really yeah. upset, or the most trivial thing, like oh my God, I was late to work today, but just like completely spiraled and like led me into like yeah. a compounding bad day, like I can't wait to get home to my wine because like I don't want to feel ticked off or annoyed.
And I very much like when something like that happens, like I need to suffer in silence. Like crying in public is a non-negotiable for me.
Understood.
Like
understood,
like my tear ducts will burst before a tear comes out, like
so that's like kind of like I guess you can connect that to ego a little bit, like where does that stem from, like why are you uncomfortable with expressing,
showing emotion,
yeah, showing,
I don't know what it is, like, and it's so interesting because there are parts of my life and like parts of me that I like to keep so private and kind of like on lock, but then here I am on a podcast like bearing parts of my soul for like anyone with an internet connection to read or listen to. But yeah, I don't know, there's like I think it's like comes from like that vulnerability, like I don't want to be vulnerable, I don't want to be perceived as like weak.
Understood.
And that's something that I've been like working through in therapy as well, and through sobriety, and just like it's okay to like have those big emotions, and like if you do hold in things like that, like it only hurts you,
right? But now that you understand a little bit more about like being a dry drunk, for example, versus emotionally sober or spiritually sober, do you identify more with one? And if so, why?
I would say definitely emotionally sober. I think that maybe at the beginning, it would have been I could have been like the dry drunk where like my main goal was just like to not drink alcohol that day. Mm-hmm. And like, I wasn't really able to show up in other areas of like self-care. Not that I was like lying and stealing and thieving and like doing B&Es, like, yeah. but like, yeah, like that level of like self-care and actually saying like, okay, like what do I need to work on? What can I work through? Like, where is this all coming from? It was more like I just need to not drink,
yeah,
and then I'll get to it, like yeah. but I have to be sober in order to get to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you?
It's funny, like I want to say I'm emotionally sober, but I think it depends on the day, if I'm being 100%. Honest, like
yeah, it's like a, truly a journey,
it's a daily assessment, constantly inspired, which is why I keep going back to meetings. Like I haven't done any step work, I'm a terrible AA like non-member, I don't think they have membership like that, but like
you're not a card carrier.
I'm not a card carrier, like I have my Barcelona weed yeah. membership card that I no longer use but have, but I don't have an AA, but like, I have a coin.
I do
like they gave me one for my 1 year.
Cute.
I love the aspect of community in AA.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword because one half of me is like, I'm super inspired after I leave meetings, like, oh my God, I want to be of service to other people. And if I'm not uncomfortable, then I'm not growing and like blah, blah, blah. But then the other end is like, I feel like I'm not good enough. Like I walk away sometimes like I'm never doing enough.
Oh.
I'm always going to have to like deal with this thing, which it's mine and carry, like I own it, like I know that like I can never drink
feeling.
But yeah, it feels like there's never enough, like I can never do enough, there's no like final destination, like that's the thing about sobriety or recovery or any life really, there's not like a finite you are recovered. You've done the work. Yeah. Like, no more that for you.
Self-actualization.
Exactly. It doesn't exist. So, Maslow, why did you even, like, put that on the pyramid? Like, it shouldn't be
yeah.
there. Like,
yeah, Maslow, if you're listening.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah. You need to revamp that. Come back to life so you can, like, yeah. completely change that. But, like, even monks, like, will pray and, like, meditate and, like, no one except for like one has been able yeah. to do it. So it's like very godlike. I just strive to be like the best version of myself. And in the process, if I can help other people along the way, yeah. great. But it's, I'd be lying to you. I'd be lying to listeners. Like, I don't wake up every day and say to myself, how can I be of service to other people?
Yeah.
Is that wrong? Me either. I don't know. But I think if I don't take care of me, I can't take yeah. care of anyone else.
I definitely agree. And like, yeah, it is a process. Like, as you get further into your sobriety and even like your podcast and your platform, like, I think that this is also like a way of being of service.
That's
like
true.
You are like spending time creating this content with like, we're not making money off of this. We're doing it.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. But we're doing it because yeah. we want to and because it's meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, I do get messages on Instagram from like women being like, your podcast did really help me. And like,
yeah.
I have like not even 50 episodes. Like for that, it's like, that means a lot. And like,
yeah.
I know how it felt when I was trying to get sober, like finding content that I like really like resonated with. Like mm-hmm. it makes all the difference and it makes you not feel alone. So I think you're not giving yourself enough credit that you actually really are showing up in a big way.
I really appreciate that. I love doing this so much.
Yeah.
It feels like, it doesn't feel altruistic. It feels yeah. very like self-serving in some capacities, but I know for a fact in listening to other people's feedback and like mm-hmm. people that do outreach, like that means the world to me because I do want to help other people.
Yeah.
I do want to like encourage people and show them there is something here that's good for everyone. Like just come.
I know, it's like, once you see the light,
yeah. you're like... and, like, get them to stay. But, yeah.
So, what's our recap? The number one controversial topic was non-alcoholic drinks. We are in favor. We are a yay.
Clearly. Clink, clink.
Number two was Cali sober. Currently, you're a nay, but open to it for someone else if it feels like the right experience at the time.
Checks and balances, just always yeah. like be honest to yourself and true to yourself, and like if it becomes problematic, stop.
Yeah, and I feel the same way even about my own experience, so mm-hmm. it's a yay for now. We'll see tomorrow, we'll see in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, we both I guess agree that like emotional sobriety at least should be part of the goal.
It should be part of everyone's goal, whether you drink or not. Taboo topics are always fun because it gets people talking. Mm-hmm. So we want to hear from you, though. What are your thoughts about the three controversial topics that Keisha just recapped? Please write in. You can follow both of us on Instagram.
My Instagram is @donewithdebauchery.
And my Instagram is @the_sober_butterfly. We see all of your messages, so please continue to like let us know what content that resonates well with you, mm-hmm. what you want to hear more of. If there's anything, you know, that you are against or in favor of, tell us.
We want to do a part two.
Yeah.
If there's any controversial topics you want us to talk about, send it in.
Love to hear from you guys. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.